Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as a part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download the USA Today Sports Plus app from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus. Fan harder.
Hello and welcome to the First Impressions edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson, joined by Nate Atkins. First of all, just want to apologize to those of you who are counting on a midweek podcast. I had a fever that would not let me do anything other than stare at the ceiling, so we didn't do that. But anyway, we're here to talk about the Colts losing 38-31 to Tampa Bay. Another game. Probably the third game this season now. We throw it in there with Baltimore and Tennessee that the Colts probably feel like they should have won, end up not winning. I think for most people it comes down to one thing.
Yeah, it's the fact that they got into the middle of the game and they're up 10 on the Buccaneers. And it's similar to last week when they're up on the Bills, and last week they gave Jonathan Taylor 31 carries, and he scored 5 touchdowns and was the AFC Player of the Week. And this week, when they went up 10, they decided to throw 26 plays in a row. And that's going to be the talking point that everyone's going to go to, especially given the fact that they ended up losing. And I think there's a lot to get into with that. Bottom line is, I don't think it's defensible to go 26 straight plays and not find a way to get Jonathan Taylor the ball. They did throw to him once. In that span, there may have been another time they tried to throw to him, but they abandoned the run like teams sometimes do to the Bucs or against the Bucs because it's hard facing Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea and Lavonte David and Devin White, and you just realize, you know, it'll take your shots on their beleaguered secondary rather than run into a brick wall. But the difference is when the Colts are built so much around Jonathan Taylor, and he's been the engine that's made them go for this winning streak that's turned their season around and gotten them back in the playoff hunt, they're just not built to win without him at all. So that really made them kind of press, and that led to some mistakes, I think, on kind of both sides of the ball. And all of a sudden, by the time they were trying to rectify it, when they finally had a drive where they gave him 8 carries for 58 yards and a touchdown, at that point, you're kind of chasing Tom Brady, and that's not a world you want to live in, and that's the world they had to live in today, and they ended up losing.
I'm going to come down on the other side of this a little bit. I don't think that I'd like to see a carry or two for Taylor in there. I don't hate it as much as everybody else does. I just don't. The Colts started out trying to run the football in the first half. It didn't work very well. They got to where they were by essentially abandoning the run and throwing it in the first half. They were 21, I think it was 21-5 in the second quarter when they scored 3 touchdowns. And it's not like the first 2 drives they had that ended in turnovers in the second half were 3 and outs that didn't do anything. That they were moving the ball. Do I want to see a couple more carries in there? Yes, but this had not shaped up to be a this wasn't shaping up like the Bills game. It wasn't shaping up as a game that Taylor was dominating. It was the passing game that had gotten them to where they were. And so I would like to see a few more carries for Taylor in that stretch. I get why, you know, our business is built to go and look at the last time something happened. So I get why we're saying 26. Yes, that's fine, whatever. But for me, it's really more 4, 5, 6, 7. It would be more of an 18 straight, because
The 2-minute drill.
The 2-minute drill at the end of the first half. I'm not. They ran it once on that 2-minute drill, and that's generally about how much you'd run it on a 2-minute drill. So, I'm not saying this that fulcrum of the game isn't where it turned. I'm just saying, I don't think it's as horrible and awful and indefensible as I think a lot of people are saying.
I hear you, and as we've talked about this, I normally come down on that same side. I mean, I don't like the narrative that is taken hold this season. Coming into this week, that Jonathan Taylor doesn't get the ball enough, because he gets the ball plenty. And last week was, as we talked about, a week when they really needed to lean into it in those conditions. This game did have a different feel to it, and I'm not saying that he needed to have 31 carries, but this idea that, you know, they're not going to run because they weren't running well. Well, you know, they had a drive there where they went back to it, and 8 carries, 56 yards, and a touchdown. Best offense they had in the second half was the drive they went back to him. And Taylor said after the game, or when we talked to him after the game, that they just changed the way they were going to run it. They started to do different things with the blocking scheme when they realized that what they came out trying to do in the first half was not working. And then it really started to work. And I mean, at some point you just got to try a little bit more than they tried it today. And the big reason is that, you know, Brandon Staley talked about how the run game is never going to be as explosive or consistently productive as the pass game, but you call it because it gives quarterbacks a breather. It lets them not have to carry things every single snap. And today, I think, even though Wentz got very hot, he still needed a breather. This passing game needed a breather, because there were moments where they're just replying with fire. Every single time when you're asking Eric Fisher to drop back and block Shaquille Barrett, eventually he's going to get home. And it's even more likely when he now doesn't care at all about the threat of a run. He'll just take the odds of, you know, if this is the play where they run on me, then I guess they do. But he was firing off the ball there for a stretch. And that's, you know, the two turnovers that really sort of swung this game were the strip sack that Shaquille Barrett won around the edge, and then it was the interception where Antoine Winfield beat out Michael Pittman for the ball, which is another example of playing with a little bit of fire, because even though they're really good at that jump ball play with Michael Pittman normally, Antoine Winfield is maybe the best center fielder in the game right now, is at timing it up and picking it off, son of a longtime NFL veteran. They did that play on a 2nd and 3. And so I just think they played with too much fire there. They didn't need to pound the rock. They didn't need to run a ton, but they just went to the air too many times, and I think it bit them.
So, in thinking about this after the game, and this isn't Greg Doyle was writing about this for us, so I was thinking about something else. But just a couple of things. That first of all, just the idea that the Bucs were pinning their ears back and only caring about the pass. Wentz said that wasn't the case in the post game. Wentz said that in that stretch of runs, he said there were probably some runs they came out and he checked out of a run because of the blitz look that Tampa Bay was giving them. There were RPOs called in there where he had to throw it. Again, I want to say this again for people who don't know RPOs that well. When an RPO turns into a pass, it is because the defense did something that the essentially the conflict defender, the player that Wentz is reading, did something that says it's going to be hard to run the ball, so you throw it. So just based on what Wentz was saying, the Bucs were still playing the run even there in the third quarter when the Colts were passing it. And I've thought about the Winfield thing. I like Antoine Winfield as a player, but he's still 5'9", and Michael Pittman's 6'4". And based on what we've seen this season of Michael Pittman in jump ball situations, was it a great ball by Wentz? No, I think you can fault him for that. But that's a play that when Michael Pittman's one on one down the field, that's a play they've had a ton of success with this year. And it's really hard for me to fault Wentz for deciding to make that throw. Winfield has one pick this year, 4 passes defended. Again, I think he's a great player, but I still like Pittman most of the time in that situation. He never got in the air. Pittman never got in the air. And he said after the game, you know, if in those situations, it's up to him to get up in the air, and he didn't do it. So he kind of put it on himself a little bit. I don't know. I realize that this puts me on the end of things where I'm going to be the target of the criticism, but I just in looking at the plays and just kind of what they said, I don't know. The Bucks did, Bruce Arians said they were going to gear up to stop Taylor, and I'd like to see them, you know, run it, give it to him a little bit, maybe once or twice on those drives, but I don't know. They were. It was a pretty good passing game for the most part.
Well, I don't I just don't think it. I understand when the Colts or Frank Reich came out after the game and said, you know, explained why it went the way it did. But I don't think it's a coincidence that they went from the 26 straight pass plays, lost the lead, and then Taylor on this last drive touched it 8 of the 10 plays. Not the last drive, but the drive they scored a touchdown. He scored a touch 8. So he went from not touching it at all for like 3 or 4 drives to touching it almost every play. I think that was a correction in the game. They realized, you know, okay, we got to get back to this. We just got to try it because at this point, the dropping back every single play isn't going to work. And then all of a sudden, it started to work with some of the schemes they were running. Taylor was making some guys miss. Just kind of the thing he does when you give him some opportunities. So I hear what you're saying. The RPO is definitely a factor to this. I mean, there were moments where, you know, they were open to the running the ball. But the thing about RPOs is that you're still giving the defense an opportunity to make you throw. You know, if their goal is don't give the ball to Jonathan Taylor, they can do things on defense that make you throw in that situation. So I'm not going to crush them for it, but I just think that I think this is a week where that criticism is legit. And I think if, you know, Frank Reich could have had it back, I think he would have done it a little bit differently too.
Yeah, there's no reason to keep belaboring the point. I know that I'm on a limb that people are going to disagree with. I think that one of the things that stuck out to me and what I ended up writing actually after the game was how this Colts through this last little run, especially after the Bills game, I think it was kind of easy to forget about some of the trouble spots on this roster, and those trouble spots to me stuck out a lot today. The Colts decided to replace Anthony Costanzo with Eric Fisher. They were betting that he'd be able to get healthy from the Achilles injury and play something similar to the way Costanzo has played the last couple seasons here. It just hasn't happened. And it's bit them at really, really bad times. He got beat in Baltimore by Odafeowa for a strip sack. He gets beat today for a strip sack on a play that honestly – I can't remember who it was, but I saw somebody showed the from Wentz's behind him view of it, and Wentz said after the game that he thought he was going to Grant's in there. He liked what they had. They had a touchdown. They had a touchdown when Wentz started to pull his hand back. I mean, the other thing is, it's not like he held onto the ball too much. He took his drop back, and he set once, and then was throwing it when the ball went out, and. If you go back and watch the play, watch Granson. He's cutting for the corner of the end zone. He's already on top of the receiver of the defensive back. And if Eric Fisher does anything against Barrett to slow him down at all on that play, it's a 31. It's probably a 31-14 game at the worst. There, it's second down.
Yeah,
and it's second and 10 from the 20. So Fisher has not. He just has not played up to what they thought he could do. And I understand, you know, that the Colts felt that they had history with him. Chris Ballard had history with him. But betting on a guy coming off of a torn Achilles tendon, there was some risk inherent in that. And it's bit them at bad times, and it bit them today at a really, really bad time when, to me, that turnover – It's not really even it should be a fumble attributed to Fisher, because I don't know how Carson Wentz is supposed to hold on to it when the ball gets hit while he's throwing it. Like, the ball's behind him, it's in one hand, he's throwing the ball at the top of his drop, not holding on to it too long. So Fisher, what they did at left tackle coming up in a huge spot again today, that stuck out to me as one thing. Another thing that stuck out, and this is something that I know that you've been talking about, is just how much Zach Pascal has had to play and be a part of this offense, and what they didn't do at wide receiver this offseason has played into that. Now, anytime we talk about wide receiver this year, we have to talk about the fact – we have to start out by saying they bet on Michael Pittman. It worked. Good decision. Great. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Everything after that, T.Y. Hilton had a good game today. Ashton Doolin had an unbelievable play today. But they don't have and haven't had a consistent number two. Pascal should be your four. The plan was for him to be the four. And the way he played the last couple years, That's a fine four to have. He has not played like that at all this year.
No, he sure hasn't. And today was just kind of rock bottom for him. I mean, he dropped a screen pass. He fumbled on, you know, the 1 9-yard carry or 9-yard play he had. He dropped another one across the middle on just an easy hitch. I mean, these were not that difficult of plays, and he just was not out there doing it. And one thing I noticed was that, you know, what worked for the Colts early is they were going after Sean Murphy bunting and really exposing him. That was the play action deep bomb to Ashton Doolin, where he got behind him. They got a pass interference call on him, and that's what good coaches do, is they go after your weak links. Well, what did the Buccaneers do? They said, okay, Sean Murphy bunting, you're going to cover Zach Pascal. And if he beats us, then so be it. And that's why Pascal started getting the ball a lot, and he just couldn't capitalize on it. And that's, you know, it shows how good of coaching staff the Bucs have, but also how few weaknesses they have, is that once they were able to move, they were able to hide one guy by putting him on your weak spot. It kind of felt like 10-on-10 at times today. They didn't have other weak spots the Colts could just pound. I mean, the closest to it was, you know, the backup guard for Ali Marpet, and DeForest Buckner won that matchup. But there just wasn't – it's absolutely right that the Colts lost this game on their you know, their weak spots. It's left tackle, it's wide receiver, Zach Pascal, it's two backup safeties. The game really comes down to those players just couldn't keep the avalanche off.
Over the last seven games, Pascal has 16 catches for 136 yards. It's an 8.5 yards per catch average. Obviously, you weren't here, but, you know, the last couple of years, he's been a 40-catch, 600-yard guy.
That's why I'm confused, is that the stats I look at him do not match the player.
No,
that's what
anybody who's watching the Colts would tell you, is it does not look like the same Zach Pascal. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on or why he's out of it. He hasn't been on the injury report. He just doesn't look like the same player. And it's not out of the ordinary for him to have a high snap count. He's always kind of had a high snap count because of his ability in the running game. And, you know, he's played a lot in those types of things. He just has not been great as a receiver, and I don't think it's Wentz related either, because early on this season, the first two games of the season, Pascal was the place Wentz was looking in the red zone with success. He had, I think, three touchdowns in the first 2 weeks, and you could kind of see them doing some of the stuff they've done with him in the past, where they would use him as the guy who just he would be the subject of, you know, when defenses aren't paying attention to somebody. Reich would get him open over the middle, crossers, that kind of thing. But this is what happens when you go into the season with Pittman as your one. You're assuming Hilton's going to be the two, Campbell's the three. Well, Hilton and Campbell have been injured lately. Mm-hmm. Campbell's out right now. He's on IR. Hilton's been hurt all season long. He's had a hard time getting going. Although today, the fourth down catch was a legit T.Y. Hilton play.
Yeah.
And then Pascal has to play a bigger role than he has. They made so many decisions that are, like, in contrast to the Buccaneers, who are super all in. They're trying to maximize however long they have Brady. The Colts tried to take a longer approach, but it's hurt them. It hurt them today in the short term. You mentioned safety. The Colts actually did a pretty good job on the two Tampa Bay star wide receivers.
Oh, they did a great job. They held them to 40 yards total. Chris Godwin and Mike Evans forced a fumble. That was Darius Leonard punching the ball out from Chris Godwin.
Another unbelievable punch.
Incredible play.
I really like my Twitter line on that Darius Leonard could punch the ball out of a statue. I like that. I like that.
By the way, he hurt his wrist, and that kind of affected him down the stretch of trying to punch the ball out some more. But they did a great job on those two. And the thing is, what I wrote about is that the plan that the Colts executed so perfectly against Josh Allen and the Bills does not work against this style of a team, because the Buccaneers are very comfortable playing left-handed. If you want to take away their two top star receivers, they will run it with Leonard Fournette. They will throw it to Rob Gronkowski. They will generate some pass interference or roughing the passer calls. Tom Brady is a point guard quarterback. He is not a hero ball quarterback the way that Josh Allen is, when he's going to force it to Stephon Diggs. And that either has, you know, you sink or swim with that matchup. Tom Brady's going to find your weak spots, and so is Bruce Arians and everyone else that they've got over at the Bucs. And that was what they did today, is they were able to just get in the middle of the field, you know, wear it down. You know, this, I noticed the second that DeForest Buckner came out with his knee injury, the Buccaneers ran duo right up the middle. Leonard Fournette runs for like 14 yards. That's what this game is, and you've got to be sturdy enough to overcome that. And the Colts' weaknesses right now at certain spots, some of it injury, some of it just the way they've built this team and how much they want to accelerate this season, they really, really shine today. This was a feeling of like this kind of had a playoff feel to it. Two teams obviously in contention and you know, just the back and forth nature of it. What they always say in the playoffs is your strengths get you in, your weaknesses get you out, and the Colts' weaknesses were the story today.
Another one of those weaknesses is the safety position with Kari Willis and Julian Blackman out. I think that the linebackers get a lot of focus on Rob Gronkowski, but just not having watched the tape, again, this is the first impressions pod, it felt like the Bucs attacked the safeties just beyond the linebackers in front of the safeties with Gronkowski today with success. I think that one of the other things that sticks out about Fournette having 100 yards on the ground is how many times he was bottled up in the middle of the line and just kept working his way down the line. Mm-hmm. No, gap after gap is filled well by the Colts front seven, and then he breaks around the outside, and the player who's got to make that tackle is usually a defensive back. And Andrew Sendejo had 6 tackles, missed badly on the touchdown run.
Yep.
George Odom didn't have any. I don't remember seeing George.
Well, he got run over by Gronkowski on one of those throws.
And so those things are like the safety position. The thing is they have Blackman and Willis, and they like those two as starters. But they came into this season, the initial 53-man roster that they took into the season had just Odom as a backup, and Odom is a special teams guy first and foremost. So not having somebody ready to go at that position has bit them, and it bit them today, I thought. I mean, and then the one other spot that I was going to highlight in terms of trouble spots on this team that ended up playing a role is they made a conscious decision this offseason to go young on the pass rush, go young on the defensive line, turn it over to some of the guys they've picked, make 2 more picks. And one of those picks is coming on pretty good. The Kwity Paye emergence in the second half is something. Another sack today. That's 3 games in a row with a sack. This is 4th game in a row that you've seen him show up in the passing game. DeForest Buckner, the guy that they planned to count on, had a sack, was dominant in the second half even after that knee injury. But they only had 3 quarterback hits because where else is the pass rush coming from? And it's because with Tyquan Lewis on IR and some of these other guys falling off a little bit, they don't have anybody else to do it. Now, do I think the pressure was terrible on Brady? No, I think that they've sped him up. But that's not how you keep Tom Brady from scoring 38 points. You keep Tom Brady from scoring 38 points by putting somebody in his face every single play. And they couldn't do that because they don't have that kind of pass rush right now. Now, it could pay off down the line. It could pay off down the line that they know what they don't have in Ben Banigou and Kamoko Touré and some of these guys, and they let them go and they build around pay. Odengbo plays better when he's not coming off of an Achilles tendon. And maybe they made those moves with a long-term in plan. That's what we were told. That's what and maybe long-term it pays off. But in the short term, against a player like Brady who's not scrambling around and doesn't need to do that to make plays, it hurts because the only way to get to Brady is to be there all the time. And they weren't there all the time today.
No, for sure. And I think what we're seeing right now is just the Colts have some amazing stars. They're putting a little too much on some of these guys to do everything. That's DeForest Buckner today had to be the pass rush, and he was great, and it wasn't enough. And the same thing with Michael Pittman. He had to carry the load of a team that wanted to throw all the time, and it was not enough. And so I will say Buckner today showed me exactly why the Colts traded for him, gave him a big contract, and are making him a franchise cornerstone. Because not only did he play so well and play through the knee injury and be so in the face of Tom Brady and give them a chance, but he had a lot of reason to be frustrated today because he's out there, he's playing hurt, he's doing everything he can, he's not getting any help in the pass rush. Sometimes they get in his face, they think they have a stop, and there's a penalty. You know, young cornerbacks, guys in the back end, all these other guys, I think, kind of let DeForest down on the field. And yet after the game, I kind of went at that as like how demoralizing is that to be doing your job play after play and to have the penalties. And, you know, and he just really took the high road, but not in a cliche way, in a pretty insightful way of just, you know, we're frustrated at ourselves, but it's collective. And I've covered other teams in Detroit and Chicago where the star players did not always take the high road. And not that they would just trash everybody, but you could see cracks. You could see them frustrated. You could see them, you know, wanting to blame a little bit. This is an ego-driven sport, and he didn't do that at all. So I will say that's why I think they can kind of rebound decently well is when you have leaders like DeForest Buckner interpreting the way they do. But back to the safeties for one second is that, you know, a couple weeks ago we were on this podcast. I was just ripping the Jaguars because I felt like they just wanted to air the ball out down the field rather than make these backup safeties tackle in space. The Buccaneers did the opposite of that. I mean, they were running it with Fournette. They were getting the ball to Rob Gronkowski. They were throwing it to Fournette. They were pretty much like, you know what, you guys are going to have to step up and tackle these big dudes again and again and again. And eventually they broke. I mean, that's what ended up winning the game was the 28-yard touchdown by Leonard Fournette. So that's a great coaching staff that just exposed weaknesses that the Colts are having to live with right now because, again, what do you do until Blackman and Willis are back? I mean, you're in a passing league and you've got backup safeties, and it's a problem against high-powered offenses.
Well, and just to kind of back up your point, they ran it on that drive. I mean, they're trying to, after the 2-minute warning, they're trying to cut down the Colts' time as much as possible. But they ran it and threw short on that just like over and over and over again, basically.
So one thing I wrote about this is that this defense is built on turnovers. They're built on, you know, trying to take away what you do best and making you press. But it is still built on the other offense making mistakes. You know, they're really good at doing it with eyes on the quarterback and everything else, and Kenny Moore and Darius Leonard punch it, but it still relies on some level of offensive sloppiness. And there are going to be certain offenses and certain patient veteran quarterbacks that's really, really hard against. So even though they came into this game on a high note and they were, you know, for stretches of this game playing really well and doing those things and forcing turnovers, at some point, you know, that other offense can take over and it becomes, you know, more about players and less about plays. And I just think the Colts are a little bit lacking in the defensive personnel at the moment.
Well, that's the thing is that we've never really seen this defense with the pass rush they want to have. Mm-hmm. We've never seen it with the 8 or 9 defensive linemen capable of getting after the quarterback that Ballard has talked about wanting to have. Now, a lot of that is that prior defensive lineman picks have not worked out. But we haven't seen them be able to do that, and that's the thing is that no defense is going to be able to dictate things until they have a pass rush. It's just a consistent every down coming after you pass rush. I was just looking through this, like what did other defensive end besides Pay do you remember noticing today?
Oh, none.
You know,
not at all.
I do. I can say that I noticed the defensive tackle. I mean, Grover Stewart is always pretty good, but at what he does. But Taylor Stallworth continues to make plays, which this little explosion by Taylor Stallworth is really fun for me, just because like I covered him when he made the Saints as an undrafted free agent. It's just kind of a fun, and he's got a great personality. He's a fun guy to watch, so it's kind of fun to see that. But outside of that, there's only so much you can expect from a guy like that, and they just don't have the pass rush they need to dictate to some of these guys. As far as that,
and they're only going to blitz so much with where the secondary is right now. I mean,
yeah, to expose these safeties. Eberflus's scheme isn't a blitzing scheme anyway. But on top of that, if you blitz right now, you have to rely on, Do you feel comfortable with either Sendejo or Odom having to make the last tackle?
Absolutely not. So if you're going to blitz, you almost need to blitz one of those guys.
Yeah, and Kari Willis was really good from safety. Sendejo's pretty reckless and costs you sometimes when he's near the line of scrimmage. You know, I'm sure there are people who are fine with the hit that he put on Brady. It was just unnecessary. There's just no reason. I mean, did it cost him that much? I don't think so. but it was just kind of an unnecessary. This is the kind of thing that Sendejo gets penalized for.
Yeah,
that's the bigger problem, is that this is the kind of mistake that he makes. It's just going all out head on and not considering the consequences, which usually actually ends up in a missed tackle, but sometimes ends up in a penalty.
And today he had both.
If there's another mistake here that we haven't talked about yet, and it's not one that I think you can necessarily pin on a failure to buttress a certain position or something like that, is it's a player that you normally would count on, is Nyheim Hines muffing a punt. That play only turned into a field goal because of a really, really important tip ball by Darius Leonard. Mm-hmm. But that field goal still mattered. That field goal still mattered considerably in terms of the Colts had to go tie. They didn't have the lead. Everything, I think, gets played a little bit differently if they don't give up that field goal. And Hines, that's actually Hines' second muff this year as a punt returner. He also muffed one in Miami on a day that no one could catch the ball. It's enough to be a little bit of a concern.
Yeah, it came at a terrible time because they had just forced a three and out, and you get that stop on Tom Brady and the Bucs offense, and you're getting the ball back, and your defense is running off the field. Immediately, they have to go back out there in the red zone. And yes, to their credit, they got really to Darius Leonard's credit, they got the stop to force a field goal, but that was still six more plays at a moment when they were trying to rush to the sideline and try to make some corrections and try and get ready for this for what was surely going to be a moment where they had to stop Tom Brady with the game on the line. Instead, when they came back out there the next time, eight plays, 80 yards, touchdown, not very much resistance. They just ran so many plays out there down the stretch, and that was one of the reasons. They didn't have a lot of gas at certain positions, and they ran out of it pretty quickly in the second half.
If there's reason for optimism with this game, I think it's this. I don't think any Colts observer or fan thought that they had to have this game. If you got it, man, it feels really good, and you're in a completely different place. And with the Titans' loss against New England, then you're feeling like maybe there's a shot at the division. You're still three back, essentially, mm-hmm. now. But in terms of the bid for the wild card, this wasn't a game that they absolutely had to have. I think most people coming into the Buffalo-Tampa two-step here the last 2 weeks of November thought, if they can get out of there with a win, they're in good shape. And they did that. So I think that's one of the silver linings here. I think one of the other ones is probably that you saw the passing game put up some yards and points, especially early on when they weren't getting anything with the running game. You know, so
I think it's a confidence builder game because, you know, we talk so much about Jonathan Taylor and how he's carried. We know they can run the ball. That's no surprise. Today, those other elements had enough flashes. You know, the passing game dominant for a half. The defense really had a nice stretch in there, forced two turnovers. They shut down two star receivers, which I don't think coming into the year you would have been, especially when Xavier Rhodes started struggling, feeling super confident about that. And it feels like, you know, they kind of gave one away today. Like, there's enough mistakes we can point to that says they gave it away. And some of these are going to recur because some of the guys making the mistakes are backup players who are mistake-prone. But at the same time, this team went forever until last week against the Bills not beating a team with a winning record. And you wanted to see them show that they could do it, that they're capable, that it's not just, oh, you beat bad teams and then – you know, then you're just on a different tier of all these good ones. They went toe-to-toe with the defending champs today, a team that's 8-3, and it came down to the final 30 seconds. And I think as frustrating as it is, that's still encouraging rather than, you know, just getting blown out.
The hard part for the Colts, the hard part for Colts fans is that this is the third game now that you feel like you were in this situation against a contender. They had a lead on Baltimore, had a lead on Tennessee the second time, end up losing both of those games. The second Tennessee game is the game that Wentz really struggled down the stretch. The Baltimore game is the one that if they just stopped anything in the last stretch, and I'm talking literally anything, like just 1 2-point conversion, they win the game. So there's got to be some frustration there. But in terms of the AFC playoff picture, I can't tell you exactly all this stuff. But our editor Nat Newell has been pouring over this, and he was telling me before this that if you look at the way this plays out in the AFC, because of all these teams that have to play each other, there's a really good chance that there's a team that's 9-8 getting into the playoffs. And I think it's possible for the Colts team that we've seen here over the last 2 months or so to go 4-1 and get to 10-7. I just do. They've got games against Houston, New England, Arizona, Las Vegas, and Jacksonville. And I think it's possible for them to go 4-1 in that stretch. And if they do, especially if the win in, you know, the I think the two games that everyone's going to point at mostly are New England and Arizona. If the win is over New England instead of Arizona, that would mean they'd be 9-3 in the AFC, and at 10-7, you'd feel good about that. So I think that's one of the other reasons that this game isn't as big a deal as maybe it felt like, because there's a path. There's a path for them to get in the playoffs here.
Also, we talk about them going 1-1 in this stretch, and at least the game they lost was the NFC team, and they beat the Bills, which
gives
them
tiebreakers a tiebreaker. A ton.
And the Bills just lost Tre'Davious White, and they're behind in the division race right now to the Patriots. So there's a chance it comes down to that. You know, the Colts will have a chance to knock the Raiders out or get the tiebreaker against them. So the path is there. I mean, we know what this team is. We know what they can't do. Well, I say that I've watched three games of theirs, but I feel like some things are coming into focus here, but it does feel like it's within their hands. This says, I don't watch a game like this and think, you know, this team, you know, it may not have been good enough against the Buccaneers today, but I think it'd be good enough to get a wild card, especially the teams they got to edge out.
It's going to help a lot for them if they can go down to Houston, get the win that everyone's going to expect them to get, and then get to the bye week. Because that's another thing with this team is it's been a long time now coming for them to get any kind of break.
And to get Kari Willis back.
So I mean, it would really help to get Kari Willis back. I wasn't there, so you'd have to tell me what Frank said about Kari this week.
He said that he's getting close. They weren't quite ready. They started the week thinking he might practice, and then it just didn't get all the way there. But so it's one of those, I don't know if that means he could come back this week, or they're just going to say, you know, let's give him two more weeks with the bye week. But you would have to think the way that they're talking about it, that it's at most one more game missed. And I think you can survive. I would like to think you could survive the Houston Texans without Kari Willis in the fearsome passing game of Davis Mills. But we'll see.
It would help. It would help to get him back, just given what they've got at safety. For I think that's it for the First Impressions edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. We'll be back midweek to preview the Texans, barring any illness-related exposures or something. But that's it. I'm Joel Erickson. This is for Nate Atkins. Thanks for listening.